Srila Siddhar Maharaj says, imitation is suicide, but my soul is covered by Maya and I can't see who am really I. How can I be authentic in my spiritual life?
Well, as aspiring devotees and student practitioners, we just follow the process and the teachings of our Guru Varga, and sincerely. We don't have to put on a show or imitate what we see in others or imitate some ideal we have in our mind. But we begin practicing sincerely, whoever we are, whatever our backgrounds are, whatever our natures. Maybe we adopt the teachings and put them into practice, and our real self will emerge through devotion. So everything will reveal in the heart. We don't need to be actors and actresses. Rather, we don't want to be. We should not be in our devotional life. Then take to heart your guru's teachings and orders, and be humble, tolerant, respectful, chant the holy name. Then the real you will emerge from within. The shining you, the golden you, will come out, and you'll see who you are and your tendency within devotional life. And everything must be very real and very genuine. And you'll come in touch with that through sincere practice. So it's never an option, imitation, acting, pretending. Rather, that would be an obstacle and a disservice. So that's never something we try to do. We avoid that altogether and just be you and be an aspiring devotee and practice and become the real you. Okay?
A Grihastha devotee obliged to pay attention to his children. However, I heard Gurudev say that we shouldn't be attached to the kids. So what should be our relationship with them? Mm-hmm.
Parents are taking responsibility for their children and teaching them, being their guardians, and nurturing them with affection and love. So if that can be done without mundane attachment, that's ideal. Be affectionate and loving and give them your time, make time for them and accept them as your responsibility. Try to be a good example for children. Then what happens in the future, who they become, that's not within your control. You've tried your best, and the fruit of who they are, that's beyond you. That is in Krishna's hands. We offer the fruit to Krishna. So we don't think they are mine, they belong to me, flesh and blood. Rather, we see everything belongs to Krishna. Everyone, everything, whoever we may be, whoever they may be, all for Krishna. Then do our best to prepare the children for Krishna and be loving and affectionate to them. But don't expect anything for yourself from them, and don't be overly attached in any mundane way. maybe easy for me to say, but I'm just repeating the ideal. Our Srila Gurudev answered many questions about how to raise children. Srila Sridhar Maharaj also, and they both gave the same message, affection. Just give them all the affection you can. Be supportive through love and never force. Never force them into Krishna consciousness. Just let them be naturally attracted and be a good example to them. Think of them as Krishna's property, and then you won't feel that mundane attachment. This is the ideal. We try to put this into practice. So if we have the right ideal, we can follow it, try to live up to it, keep it as our standard, as our barometer, and go on as best as we can. Ultimately, it's completely out of our control who our children become. There's no guarantee that they will become devotees, even good people in the world. There's risk involved in having children. Terrorists have children. Terrorists were once somebody's children. Murderers, criminals. They were all somebody's beautiful little baby. So, risk is involved in having children. We are prayerful and try our best and be in the right consciousness. Try to do everything in a way that's devotional and hope for the best. Next.
We should practice what we preach. But if I can't practice, should I still share this knowledge with someone? Will such preaching have any value, or it will be just an empty sound?
Everyone can practice. Even you who's asking, wondering about how to preach but cannot practice, but you can chant the holy name of Krishna, you take the prasadam, associate with the devotees, participate in some service. Everyone can practice. It's not impossible. Go to a temple and spend some time with the devotees. Go to a devotee's house. Invite them to your house. Stay with devotees and try to do what they do. Serve them, and you'll be practicing. In what you appreciate, you can extend that to others, and that's preaching. What you like about Krishna consciousness, Vaishnav culture, bhakti yoga, share it with whoever you meet, and that's preaching. So yes, we practice and preach. We're not hypocrites. We don't consider ourselves exempt from following and practicing and then go try to be great preachers. That we avoid and we don't do. But we sincerely try our best, follow the procedures and practices as our gurus have given us. And can be very simple. Extend that to others. It's simple for the simple and complicated for the complicated. So we can keep it simple and this way everyone can preach, even children. children oftentimes come with us, Sanagar Sankirtan, distribute invitations, attract people. They see little girls and boys with devotional clothes and chanting the holy names. It's very attractive to people. They're also preaching. They're also practicing. So it doesn't have to be so impossible and unattainable. Okay?
What does it mean? Half truth is worse than a lie. How can we apply this in our spiritual life?
There's a Bengali proverb that says, that translates as, a half truth is worse than falsehood. And then there's variations of the same idea in different writers. But in essence, it means deception. A half-truth can lead to deception. And there's a story about the blind man and the elephant. Blind men are all touching an elephant, different parts of the elephant, and feeling the tail is like this, long and thin, moves. The tusk is a certain shape and size, and it has air coming out at the end, little holes. Another one's feeling the ear. Another one's feeling the belly is very big and round. So they're all experiencing something accurate, but different parts of the body. They're not seeing the whole picture. So they're each saying, this is what I'm experiencing, it's like this. It's not wrong, but it's not the whole truth. They're not getting the whole idea of what they're experiencing. So like that in spiritual life, we need to understand the whole picture and go to the central conception of divinity, understand things from a proper perspective and see the whole picture. Who is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, from whom everything and everyone expands and everything's originating, and how everything works, from a complete understanding. We don't want any partial understanding. It can be deceptive. So that's the way I understand it.
Which scriptures are more important for us, the books of our Gurudev or Chaitanya Charitamrita and Bhagavatam?
Gurudev recommended the Mott books published by the Chaitanya Saraswat Mott, his guru's books, Srila Sridhar Maharaj's books, his own books, as recommended for our devotee section, because he said all the essence of all the scriptures, Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Garga Samhita, Brahma Samhita, everything is distilled, and all the important scriptural injunctions are collected by our Guru Varga and distilled into one place. All the important things that are being emphasized by our Gurudev and Srila Sridhar Maharaj, that's what's in our books. So he said that would be the best thing to start with. And you can read them and read them again and again. They're living scripture. So I think many of us had this experience. We've read Golden Volcano how many times, and every time it's a new experience because it's living. It's living scripture, dynamic. But Chaitanya Charitamrita is our ultimate book. We study that. That's our morning program. And that's in Navadip Chaitanya Saraswat Math. They read it in the evening after Arati. It's the nighttime class. So that is part of our program too. And it's everything is there, but it's also recommended to read under guidance of Sadhu Sangha, because that's Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami giving all the highest truths and the ultimate everything. Some of it may be beyond our eligibility to understand. So we try to hear that from higher sources. So the general suggestion and recommendation by Gurudev was give importance for the general devotees, our Mott books, Srila Sridharmaj and Srila Gurudev's books. Okay?
There were many big acharyas such as Shankara, Ramanuja in India, and they had big missions. But with time, almost all of the missions vanished. Why did it happen?
In time, everything becomes lost. The Rupanuga current, the teachings of the Lord, revealed truth, Amnaya Tattva, all becomes lost in course of time. That includes the teachings of our Guru Varga and these other acharyas and their missions. It all becomes something else in time. And Krishna says, I come myself to reestablish religious principles and to annihilate the miscreants, to save the devotees. Or I send my representatives, plural. They come and they do that same relief work to reestablish proper conception. So that's the nature of time in this world. It transforms things, and when it comes down into this plane, can easily turn into something else, become distorted through time. Truth becomes untruth, untruth becomes truth. The upside down banyan tree, the Asvatthama banyan tree, we read in the Gita, it's explained. So that happens here. So individually, we can try our best to be harmonious in our dealings, try to keep a good family environment, not induce conflict or create issues or disharmony amongst ourselves. That will be a help, but ultimately it's out of our hands, it's out of our control what becomes of the mission. It's all in the Lord's hands. So we accept Krishna's will. But we have something within our ability to try to control our own selves, be helpful and contributors, to be service-oriented and not disservice-oriented. that can be helpful. So time can do its thing, and we'll have to see what is Krishna's will, but we try the best we can. Whatever's within our grasp, within our control, we try to be helpful.
I have noticed that the usual people are often attracted to the devotees, even if these people are not interested in God. What is that, and how to transform this attraction into something spiritual?
Well, what comes to my mind is devotees are nearer than God. They're nearest to us. Maybe people don't believe in God or understand He exists, have appreciation for Him, but they see the devotees have so many good qualities. They're right before them. Beautiful people, auspicious people, living a very auspicious life, full of good qualities, very attractive. They become attracted. That's natural. Maybe they can get some Sukriti through Vaishnava association and benefit and begin to actually transform into some kind of devotional spiritual life. Devotees are always busy distributing Sukriti, trying to go and do welfare work for the sincere public. And Sukriti is distributed through the Vaishnavas, giving people a chance to come and become spiritual, become devotees, or participate in some service, do something for the Vaishnavas, contribute something. And Sukriti is being generated within them. So it depends ultimately on the person's fortune. Are they fortunate enough so that they can get some Sukriti and be transformed, and maybe their external attraction becoming something more substantial? That depends on the person. We've seen that many times. There might be friends of the devotees who ultimately become devotees in time through good association, through engaging in service. They come to visit the devotees in the temple, end up cutting vegetables, doing service to the deities and the devotees. They get spiritual benefit. This way, Sukriti is being distributed. People on the street give a donation for the devotees. That goes to the service of Mahaprabhu and his mission. When Gurudev first visited San Jose on his first world tour, he saw the whole valley was full of auspicious symptoms. And he said it's because devotees had been living there for 20 years and doing various services and worshipping the deity and doing fundraising and preaching and so many different printing books, distributing books, and the whole valley became full of auspicious qualities from their activities. And Gurudev was so amazed. He said, I see so much auspiciousness, so many auspicious faces and symptoms, and he was so happy And he called San Jose the labor room of his mother. And what he meant by that was that's where the Guardian of Devotion books were produced, where they were born by Goswami Maharaj's grace, Mahayogi's grace, all the devotees working together. They produced those books and they were born there. And Gurudev said that about San Jose. The labor room of my mother. So, people in general coming into contact with devotees may have the wrong intentions at first, maybe just attracted to their physical charm and beauty and sweetness and good qualities, but getting some exposure to bhakti, to Krishna consciousness, and benefiting. That's more powerful, the spiritual element and the sukriti and the power of the devotees outshines and outdoes anyone's ulterior motives. So that's a hopeful thing. We're not weary when we find people attracted to us. And oftentimes it can be dovetailed and utilized for their benefit. Sometimes not. So we have to be mindful, okay?
It is said that India is Bharata Varsha, and every soul that is born there is already has some definite spiritual level. What is your impression? Do you think that simple living helps to promote high thinking, or at least makes it easier to achieve?
Yes. How is it? How are these two thoughts combined? Okay. Yeah, India is auspicious, it's Bharatvarsha. It's full of holy places. Birthplace of Mahaprabhu, Lord Krishna, our Guru Varga, holy dhams. Everyone born there has some sukriti, no doubt. We go there for taking the dust of these holy people, and especially the holy people on our head, and worship the holy Dham in all these places. We only go there for our spiritual benefit. And simple living, high thinking is our motto, and it's the truth. We live simply, we can be free to think about higher things, we won't be overburdened with complicated and stressful things that make spiritual thinking impossible. Keep it simple, live within your means, don't go into debt. That was one of Srila Swami Maharaj Prabhupada's emphasis. First, get out of debt. Don't be in debt in this world. And you'll be free to live simply and think about higher things. Don't sell yourself to this world and be caught in it. Don't burden yourself living a complicated life, but keep it simple within your means, and then you can be happy and chant Hare Krishna. Okay.
What about children and parental debt?
Parental debt? Well, ultimately, there's no debt if you surrender to the Lord. If somebody's child becomes a devotee and surrenders to Guru and Gauranga, that child has no debt to the parents, but that child is fulfilling the ultimate debt, and that's to the Supreme Person. We're all indebted to the Supreme Person. We're part and parcel of Him. We're meant for Him. And when we surrender everything, all our debts are released. We're free from them. But if someone does not surrender, then yes, there's some debt to our parents. Some responsibility to care for them, look after them. And that would be something ideally done in a grihastha ashram. So, a householder who has family, also take care of the parents. That's common sense, and it's the tradition of India with their joint families. Now in modern times, less. People are trying to escape that responsibility. And in countries like America, parents get to a certain age and put them in a nursing home, visit them once a month. This kind of culture is very degraded. So, we are interested in ultimate things. That's why we're here, and we're trying to surrender, become devotees, dedicate ourselves exclusively, and having that ideal standard that we're trying to live up to. So, for all of us here, if we can surrender more and more, and really give ourselves to Guru and Krishna and the Vaishnavas, there's no official debt to our parents. That doesn't mean we're callous or careless. We don't abandon them whimsically. And we have a heart and give a little love to them. It's not forbidden, but we don't become attached. We don't leave the ashram to go to live with them. Visit sometimes, depending on who you are and your situation. Try to give them a little attention and a little mercy. And a lot of our devotees' parents become devotees also. And then you really don't want to abandon them. If they're also Vaishnavas and initiated by our Guru Varga, chanting the holy name, we must see them as Vaishnavas. So that's beyond mundane debt, but it's become spiritual at that point. They've become our God brothers, God sisters. They've become devotees of some kind. Then we treat them as devotees. So there's so many unique situations and possibilities, and depending on a certain circumstance, we adjust according to time, place, circumstance. we have any more questions?
At a certain age, children realize that everything and everyone will die. Later, however, we seem to forget about mortality. Why does this happen?
Well, Yamaraj, Dharmaraj, asked this question in the form of a bird to Yudhisthira Maharaj. And Yudhisthira Maharaj, well, the question was, what is the wonder of this world? And Yudhisthira Maharaj answered, the wonder is that everyone, everything, plant, animal, human, all the different species of life, they're all dying right in front of us. And still we think we're immortal, that we're not going to die. This is the wonder of the world. And it's due to the influence of Mahamaya covering our vision. We're under a spell of Maya, of illusion, making us think like this, that we're immortal, seeing everyone die, but living like we're never going to die, not preparing to die, not living with the idea that soon this is all going to be over with, it's a passing show, don't get too comfortable. The Goswamis of Vrindavan, they understood this and they were not under any illusion. They lived under different trees every night, living in extreme, austere situations, not wanting to get too comfortable here, knowing it's all going to disappear. They were self-realized souls, God-realized souls, full of Krishna Prema, giving the ultimate thing to humanity, but following very strictly in their own lives, showing the example of detachment within devotion. So, due to the influence of Mahamaya, of illusion, we become complacent, knowing in the back of our minds, yes, we're all going to die, but being covered with the illusion that there's no need to prepare for death, to be conscious of it, or even think that it's going to happen to us anytime soon. Trying to secure more and more comforts in this material world. We're busy for that, trying to get well established and find security in this world where there's no security. It's a wonder of wonders. Yamaraj knows very well, what's with this? Why are people in this world thinking they're immortal? And asking this question, what's the wonder of this world? What's going on, really? Yudhisthira Maharaj giving the real distilled essence. This was one of many questions asked by Yamaraj, who's Yudhisthira Maharaj's father. This pastime we can read in the Mahabharata.
If we see one devotee being rude to another devotee of the same position, should we tolerate this?
Generally not, but we can politely point it out. You're being rude. This is not acceptable. What's your problem? Please try to correct yourself. If we're a little senior to this, a devotee who's being rude, we can try to say something in defense of the devotee who's being mistreated. It depends on who we are. Who is the witness of this? What is our position? What is our capacity? And is it our responsibility? If we're very junior, we go to a senior and say, this happened, and the senior person can correct it. So, there are examples of this you find. And there's some hierarchy in spiritual life, some idea of junior and senior, some etiquettes involved. And to some extent, we regard that and we follow that. So as junior devotees, we're generally not to correct senior devotees. But if we're concerned about something, seeing someone mistreated, we can go to a senior devotee. We can even go to that person who's being, why you're doing this? I don't understand. This is not Vaishnav behavior. In a sincere way, why? It really depends. If it was me and I saw someone being mistreated, it would affect me. I would be upset. And depending on who it was, I would react in a certain way. Depends who it is, depends who you are, then everything can be adjusted. Okay.
Many New Age religions advise people to forgive and accept yourself, and in this way become peaceful. But I feel like all of this forgive yourself talk is bogus. What is the Vaishnava vision of self-acceptance?
Well, if you read the translations of the songs we sing, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Nartam Das Thakur, Lochan Das Thakur, Srila Gurudev, Srila Sridhar Maharaj, all very self-deprecating. We admit we're helpless, we're fallen, we're well aware of our condition and our plight. And for them, they're showing us the example of who we are. And maybe they genuinely feel that. Nartam Das, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. They feel genuinely humble, but they're really showing us who we are and what is our plight in this world. Teaching us through this humble language, through all this self-deprecating concepts. So we come to terms with reality of who we are. We accept we're fallen, we're degraded, we're motivated by lust, anger, greed, hatred, envy. Always trying to enjoy and always getting punished for it. All these pathetic things that you read about in the songs are really our situation, and we accept it because we've fallen into this material world, we're conditioned souls, and we're in a very miserable situation, whether we realize it or not. And we have to come to terms with it, accept it, and pray for grace and mercy. Help me, Lord. You're my only hope. So that's what comes to my mind. These Vaishnava songs and the humility expressed, the condition expressed in these songs of the jiva soul, the conditioned soul. It's all very pathetic, and it's realized and given to us. This is your situation, and this is the ideal of how to accept it and how to make yourself a receiver for that positive grace from above. The devotee comes to a point in their lives where they realize, I have no hope, no other shelter, nothing. I only need your mercy, Lord. And to be desperate has to come to some desperation before that mercy comes. So I think in our Vaishnava culture, it's coming to terms with our fallen condition, recognizing it, understanding it, embracing it. Yes, we're worse than Jagai and Madai. Worms in stool. All these pathetic things we read about in the songs. Slaves of lust, anger, greed, hatred. Slaves of the evil mind. We accept it. It's the truth. But please help me, Lord. No other way than some grace from you descending my way. That temperament is conducive for attracting that positive. Negativity attracts positivity. And this is expressed in the songs of our Vaishnavacharyas. So that's how I see it. That type of acceptance we can have about ourselves. Okay, maybe one last question.
How can we learn to trust? Sometimes in different situations it's difficult to make a choice, and it's difficult to trust in someone.
Mm-hmm. Say the first part again.
How to learn to trust.
How to learn to trust. Well, Gurudev said about himself that he always trusted everyone first. That was his preference, and that was his custom and tradition. He trusted everyone, and he was glad about that. He was proud. But sometimes he would be betrayed and find later he shouldn't have trusted them. But he said, still I'd prefer to always be trusting. Later I might regret it, but I'm prepared to take that risk because I'd rather be a truster than a doubter or suspicious. I'd rather have that drive in me and that mood and that nature to trust than to distrust. So I heard him say that many times. And he was cheated, he was betrayed by certain people, and that was painful for him. But he didn't regret trusting them, saying it's better that way. To be suspicious and distrusting of everyone all the time is unhealthy and bad for our spiritual lives and every kind of life, every aspect of life. And if we're going to suffer for our trust, then so be it. We're prepared. That was Gurudev's mood. that may not apply to everyone. Some of us may be more careful. See, is this person trustworthy before we trust them? Who are they? What is their character? What is their background? Where did they come from? Might inquire about all these things. Some examination first. That's also natural. In the guru and disciple relationship, traditionally there's a 1 year period where the guru will examine the disciple and the disciple will examine the guru before any initiation takes place. That's the custom in the scriptures. Then there's acceptance at a certain point, usually after a 1 year examination. Goswami Maharaj said the other day that, and I believe he was quoting Srila Sridhar Maharaj, blind faith is diseased faith. So to blindly have faith, it's not proper. It's a diseased type of faith. Still, I believe it's better than no faith at all. Maybe it's faulty, maybe it's imperfect, maybe it's diseased, but it's better than nothing at all. And that diseased faith can be cured and treated and made into proper, healthy faith through Sadhu Sangha, Krishna Nam. So it really depends on time, place, circumstance, who we're talking about, what is the situation, who to trust, who not to trust. But what came to my mind was Gurudev's ideal, wanting to trust everyone, give everyone a chance first. In America, we live by the judicious law that innocent until proven guilty. That's our system in the court of law. We treat everyone as innocent until they've been proven guilty. Give everyone a chance and then see what comes from that. So, not a black and white answer for this question. A lot of gray areas, a lot of things to consider. Several considerations are there. Have to deal with absolute and relative considerations and harmonizing the two according to time, place, and circumstance. And we can always consult with higher Vaishnavas and our gurus about specifics, what would be best. Can we trust this person? Can we not? If we're not sure and we don't know which method to adopt, Gurudev's method or the US judicious system or whatever, ask a higher Vaishnava, see what they think, see what their opinion is about them.